This is John Williams, Joe Brand, obviously doing sports. Griffin Filipich is our Saturday morning producer. Hi, we're here till 12 noon. I'm on weekdays from 1 to 3, and on social media, I'm WGN King John. On Facebook today, I posted you guys a video you should watch. It's in Fort Lauderdale. I think it's in Fort Lauderdale. It's in a Florida city, and it's the video of the kids in a first grade class, and each day when they go to class, they have to do something that we should all take note of. It shows one of the kids standing, and I assume that they rotate through so that a different kid is in this position each day. But he is standing there, and his classmates all come into school that morning. They line up, and they have to walk past him, look him in the eyes, and give him a firm handshake. First graders doing this. Eye-to-eye contact, handshake. Some of the kids opt for a hug. They shake his hand, bring it in, give him a little hug, and then move on. But it's just such a great learned skill. And in an age when interpersonal communication skills are so lacking, right? We don't talk to each other. We don't like to talk to each other. Eye contact's awkward. These kids are learning that. Anytime that I meet a young person, or an adult for that matter, and they look me square in the face and shake my hand, I so appreciate that. It's kind of a gift of you, a gift of attention and effort. And here's these first graders looking one square into the eyes of the other first grader, shaking hands, you know, bringing it in, maybe not. Boys and girls, all sizes, all races. It's a very blended class. It's just a positively lovely thing. So I recommend that you look at that on my Facebook page. By the way, Domati, did you, when you mentioned the temperatures, I don't think you did mention the water temperature in Lake Michigan. I saw today a thing because it's going to be 147 degrees. It's going to be 93 or 94 this weekend. Last Sunday, the high temperature was 52. We'll have a 40-plus degree swing over the course of a week.
Does that concern you?
Sure it does. Absolutely it does. High temperatures don't scare me. Low temperatures don't scare me. But I described this yesterday on the show, Domati. A climate scientist once told me that if you're thinking about climate change, don't confuse it with the weather. Here's a way to imagine the relationship between the two. Imagine that you have a die, like you would roll in a board game, one of those two dice, and you roll it. You've got six faces on that. In normal times, four of the die faces would read average, weather. One of them would read above average, maybe more volatile or warmer. One of them would read below. What we have now is the faces have changed, so that now maybe three of the faces say average, two say above, one say below. On any given day, you cannot say that an especially hot day is climate change. But over a period of time rolling the die, you will see a pattern, and it will be more volatile weather, and it will be warmer weather. So is this weekend climate change? Maybe it would have been this way anyway, but you're going to see more and more of these over time. I think that's a good way to put it. But Dom, I read today that while it's going to be very warm, the safe water temperature to swim is 70 degrees or above. I don't know what the water temperature is in Lake Michigan now, but there was somebody rescued yesterday. I don't know if they survived. I just saw the story about a rescue in Lake Michigan. Somebody jumps into the water, and then you do that gasp. You can't breathe because the water's so flipping cold. It's hard to believe that it could be so shockingly cold when it's so warm outside. So I need the water temperature for our listeners.
59 degrees right now.
Oh, man. And I don't know, 59 doesn't sound that cold. Air temperature, I can do that. But 59 water temperature, you jump into that and it's 90 degrees outside and you will go into one of those shocks. You'll go, so don't do that. Wade in, get a wetsuit. I don't know what you're supposed to do, but just be warned. The largest Memorial Day parade in the nation may be in Chicago today. We rank right up there. Grand Marshal this year is Major General Charles Whittington Jr. and James Fraser. They'll lay the wreath. I guess you had this a little while ago, Domati, and do the parade ceremony, or the parade. The wreath-laying ceremony starts in 43 minutes at Daly Plaza downtown, and then the parade kicks off at noon on State Street. More details at cityofchicago.org. But if you're doing stuff downtown or if you're coming into the city, be advised that it's going to be hard to get across Michigan Avenue today because they just closed the streets off. And this is interesting. If you come up to one of the cops at one of the intersections and you want to make a right or left-hand turn going east or west across Michigan Avenue, if you just roll down your window and say, hey, excuse me, could you tell me where I can make a turn to get across Michigan Avenue? They will tell you to move it along. Move it along. Yeah, I know, but could you move it along? Okay, thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. So my recommendation is, say you're going north, go to Wisconsin, turn toward Iowa, and then come back down through Naperville. And eventually you'll get around. I ran into that a little bit today while riding in a cab heading over to the Randolph Street Market. 15 years today, the Randolph Street Market anniversary. What a great event. Great food, great beverages, great live music, jazz, sometimes pop, and then a few hundred curated vendors selling antique bicycles and really cool industrial furniture and all kinds of jewelry and fabrics and things that you just can't imagine. Every time I go there, I think, oh, I never saw that coming. Really neat old vintage signs. It's just a really pleasant event. It's on Randolph Street. Randolph Street Market is up and running. PBS is doing something right now where they are inviting you to read, and they have 100 books that I'm not exactly sure how they curated this list, but there's a list of books that PBS is recommending that America reads, right? And then they're talking about them. Meredith Vieira was on with us this week. She's the host of this PBS series of shows where they'll talk about these books. Hopefully you're reading them, talking about them. There'll be forums and chats and events and TV specials. The first one was 2 hours this week where Meredith was talking about the list of books, which includes 50 Shades of Grey. Vieira says, I didn't make the list. I said, did you read this book? She said, no. Of the 100 books, and these are all fiction, I've read 13 of them, and 6 of them were assignments. So I'm not a real fiction reader. Griffin, you will do well on this list, I think.
I don't know.
George Orwell's 1984?
Yeah.
I'm not going to read all 100. A Separate Piece, John Knowles?
No.
I'm giving you the ones I've read.
Oh,
Tom
okay.
Sawyer?
Yeah.
Chronicles of Narnia?
No.
50 Shades of Grey?
No.
50 Shades of Grey.
No.
Grapes of Wrath?
Yes.
Great Gatsby?
Yes.
I have a lot of books in here. I go, oh, yeah, I know that one.
Do you notice Griff is saying yes to all of the books we had to read in school?
Yeah, right. And here's the weird thing about Griff. He kind of enjoyed it, too. That's the weird thing.
Right.
That's the sad. Harry Potter series.
Yeah, of course.
See, so you just picked up, what, 12 books right there.
7. Come on.
Yeah. I have not read a paragraph of Harry Potter and will die that way. Not against it. I'm just...
This is a weird list. I'm scrolling through it now.
Lord of the Rings.
Pretty standard classics, but then more populist classics like... Yeah, 50 Shades, Game of Thrones, like the Da Vinci Code.
I know, the Da Vinci Code's on there.
All right.
And of all of the Vonnegut stuff, The Sirens of Titan, okay. Ernest Hemingway's Sun Also Rises, To Kill a Mockingbird.
I resist these books that every American should read or whatever they're prescribing.
Why?
Because there's no one way to be an American.
No,
read
but
you
I do
read.
Think if you're an American, you need to have seen 2001: A Space Odyssey or The Godfather.
I don't even think that's true.
You know, I know the president has his sort of definition of an American, but when I get to be king, if you haven't seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Graduate, or 2001: A Space Odyssey, bye-bye.
But you're just engaging in the same. This is what I'm saying. It's like I don't like that kind
yeah,
of
but I do.
Talk. I know you do.
I'm engaging in that because I endorse that. It's part of our vocabulary.
GQ always had a list of books every man should read. It's like, get at it. Why is GQ telling me what books to read?
I know that. Well, that's their definition. But I do think if you're walking about the United States of America, it's helpful to know who Tom Sawyer is and why and what a white picket fence meant. And you should know Atticus Finch, right? Right? I mean, that makes sense.
It doesn't hurt. But you could pick any other 100 books, and it would probably be just as valid a list. I don't think that they've cracked the code here.
Maybe not on this list, not with 50 Shades being there. Although I did read that book, and I did see that movie by myself, in an audience of women on opening night. I had everything but a trench coat on in order to make myself just seem positively creepy. Okay, I just want you to text or call 312-981-7200 and give us a recommendation for that book that you think we should all be versed in. Let's bust Griffin's chops a little bit. Begin each recommendation with, Griffin, wait a minute, you haven't? And then tell us what that book is. Maybe Griffin has. 312-981-7200. And I'll come back with an observation about a new book called West Winging It, an unpresidential memoir. Pat Kinane is a young man who worked for 6 years in the Obama administration, rising to senior speechwriter, or no, senior writer. So that would be everything from speeches to op-eds to getting him on Comics and Cars with Jerry Seinfeld, or whatever that was, Coffee in a Cab, or whatever the Seinfeld thing was. This is the guy that was pushing and sometimes authoring Barack Obama's messages. And I've been reading the book. Very funny story about that in a minute. Griffin, I was talking about that book, West Winging It. It's by a young man named Pat Kinane. He'll be in town for the Lit Fest. He was a senior writer for Barack Obama for 6 years. Started out as an intern. He tells the story about how from Philadelphia he was going to go to college. He had been accepted to Georgetown, and he had been accepted to University of Miami, you know, the one in Florida. And he was going back and forth with his mom. His mom wanted him to go to Washington to college. He wanted to go to Florida to college. His girlfriend was going to Miami, too. So they were having this debate back and forth, and it was one of these unending things. Her mom is watching Larry King on CNN. Dr. Phil is on. She says, I'm going to call Dr. Phil and ask him right now what we should do, knowing that they would say go to Washington, D.C. He goes, yeah, Mom, go ahead and call. Sure, they'll take your call. She gets on the phone. And about 10 minutes later, he's sitting in the kitchen listening, and all of a sudden he hears Larry King say, Philadelphia, hello, go ahead. It's his mom. His mom is on with Larry King and Dr. Phil. She says, Doctor, my young, wonderful son has been accepted to two schools. What should we do? Larry King says, well, I'm from Miami. King got his start in South Florida, never went to college. He says, I think that's a great place. Great place, great town. And Dr. Phil says, does he get good grades? Is he a good young man? If he's been accepted to those two schools, you should let him decide. You're eating stone crabs, baby. Enjoy Florida. Woohoo! It didn't go the way his mom thought. She cries into the receiver, fraud. But by then they had muted her phone, and that never got on the air.
That was a flawed plan. What, Washington insider Dr. Phil, of course he'll recommend D.C. Like,
you're gonna love them stone crabs.
I don't know the theory there, yeah.
She thought Larry was going to bail her out. Keep texting. I got to take a break here for the news, but the books that you think Americans should be versed in. Griff's got the list. He'll read them a little bit in the next half hour. What books should we all be reading? It's a list of 100. It's not perfect. You can add to it. 312-981-7200. Text to that. Were you able to hear the tweet thing?
That too mattered.
Well, it actually kind of does because I was looking at some of the president's tweets. He's been on another Twitter tear. I'm only reading two of these because I think they're important to the news. This one says from 15 hours ago, we are having very productive talks with North Korea about reinstating the summit, which, if it does happen, will likely remain in Singapore on the same date, June 12th, and if necessary, will be extended beyond the date. So there the president is holding out that the, in fact, canceled or invitation denied or not accepted summit is still going to happen. He's holding out that it could still happen June 12th in Singapore. But then 18 minutes ago, he tweeted this. The failing at New York Times quotes a senior White House official who doesn't exist as saying, even if the meeting were reinstated, holding it on June 12th would be impossible given the lack of time and the amount of planning needed. Wrong again. Use real people, not phony sources. So two stories to follow then are, A, will we in fact have that summit with North Korea and Singapore? And B, will it happen on June 12th as was originally scheduled and is like tomorrow? It's very, very soon. We're asking you to text to 312-981-7200. Books that should be on that list. The Great American Read on PBS is recommending that you and I read 100 books and that we all talk about them. It's a funny list. Some books that are on here are not surprising. Some of them are. Griffin's not a fan of the whole concept, I kind of am.
I don't hate it. Whatever. We're talking. We're just talking. We're saying words into microphones, and those came out. But it's fine. Whatever. Good text,
wow,
though.
What was that?
No,
we're
just
saying words into microphones, and that just came out.
Okay, I just don't care.
I'm not going to judge you or color you. Go ahead.
They want to make a list of books, that's great, but I don't really care about it. But I do like the text we've been getting. Somebody said Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Yeah.
That is on the list. That's a good one. A lot of people, what else? A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving. Multiple texts have said that. That is also on the list.
Oh, good. A Praying for Owen Meany by
Jimmy
Irving.
Buffett's autobiography, A Pirate Looks at 50. I don't think that made the cut, but I do appreciate the text. Somebody recommended that one.
You know, really, that's the thing. My derisive laugh is the very problem with lists like this. That was kind of judgy, and hey, if that book spoke to you, more power to you, right? Have fun.
Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. That I just read that one last year. It's great. Good suggestion from 815. Anyway.
All right, fine. To Kill a Mockingbird's on the list. The Outsiders, Pilgrim's Progress, The Help is on there. A lot of you read and enjoyed that. And the list goes on. Tom Clancy's on here, Hunt for Red October. It's 10:42. This weekend, of course, is really the start of summer. Memorial Day, the wreath-laying ceremony in 19 minutes, the parade in Chicago in an hour and 19 minutes down State Street. And the Indy 500 is tomorrow at 11:19. It's on ABC. Ed Carpenter starts from the pole. It'll be the 36-year-old Danica Patrick's last race. She qualified in seventh this year. She'll be in the third row in that GoDaddy car. Her best finish at the Indy 500 is third in 2009. We've been talking to Dane Neal on weekends. I wanted to throw him on one more time. Our host of On the Road with Dane Neal, 2 o'clock this afternoon, and jumping on with us for a minute here. Hey, Dane, how are you?
Hey, John. Got to put a vote in for Charlotte's Web as the book. We just read it as a family. It was just as riveting as it was when I was 8.
That's on there.
Isn't that nice to know? I love the idea of families reading a book together.
I mean, I don't want to take too much time for it, but you know what? It's surprisingly rewarding. The kids absolutely love it. You know, you say like, oh, this is dumb. Put the book down. And they're like, no, keep reading. I'm serious. People should do that.
Isn't that nice? You know, one book that I read to both of my sons, and I don't know that I read in its entirety that many books to them, but when I remember us weirdly really enjoying The Autobiography of Tony Hawk.
And what could be in there, John?
He's a good guy. And there was all sorts of little lessons, and we were all skateboarders at the time, or they were, so I was too, and we were at Tony Hawk's autobiography. It was compelling. Hey, what is
you know,
go ahead.
Well, John, you mentioned that, and that's like a perfect kind of lead into the whole kind of Danica Patrick thing you just mentioned, because, you know, when I think a 10,000-foot view of Tony Hawk, I think what else could be in there other than, you know, what we see on, you know, the X Games and things like that, or with the shoes of the skateboards. And that's, I think, the kind of thing we're going to find out in the future from Danica Patrick. What else is there?
Yeah, what else does she have? Well, you know, when I look back at her career, I'm not an expert, but I do enjoy more and more each year NASCAR and the Indy circuit,
nice.
the Indy 500. I wonder what her legacy is going to be, because outside of being the first female to lead a lap at the Indy 500, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, will she be remembered as a great race car driver?
Oh, I think so, for sure. And this is kind of where just that, I think the gimmick, you know, and sort of just the, hey, look, it's a lady, she's racing. She'll be for sure undeniably the greatest female race car driver, for whatever that means, you know, and however we kind of take that. But she's super competitive in the 7 Indy 500s that she did. She had, you know, top 10 finishes in all of them.
Hmm.
You mentioned the third place finish. She led a bunch of laps there, fourth place as well. So there are a lot of drivers in that field that will never get that close. She's great. She did make that transition to NASCAR, race 9 years in the stock car race, didn't find anywhere near the amount of success. But sports is the great equalizer. You know, talking to some of the NASCAR drivers and teams over the last couple of years, they kind of blocked out the fact that she was a lady, and she was just kind of a middle of the road driver when it came to stock cars. And I think some of them were a little resentful at that, you know, because sponsorship and all that support, it's a big part of racing, that she got that much support and attention, even though she wasn't really delivering on the track for NASCAR. But for IndyCar, absolutely. She was really, really, really good. And hopefully maybe she's got as good a chance of any to win this Sunday.
I'd love to see her compete. I'd love to see her do well. You know, I'm not I've described myself as a Johnny Come Lately to motorsports, and I enjoy it when I watch it, and I do. On Saturday, I'll click around, and if there's a race, I'll watch it. But Danica Patrick is the Tiger Woods for me. That may be heresy to people that really know and love the sport, but I'm not them. But you want to bring people to the sport? Danica Patrick really did that for me. I was always looking for the green car. You know what I mean?
Yep. So you'll be looking forward to it again tomorrow, too. And if you're looking for, and if any of the listeners are kind of thinking, you know, what's that moment to take that jump into the pool of fandom and support, the Indy 500 is one of them. You know, we talk about the, you know, other kind of bucket list sporting events, regardless of how interested you are specifically on a day-to-day basis in that sport. But the Indy 500, the greatest spectacle in racing, 300,000 people. You have Jim Cornelissen singing Back Home in Indiana.
Yeah, that's right.
And I mean, it doesn't get any bigger. Passion, pageantry, and of course, you know, a legendary amount of libations typically in the infield to go along with it. I mean, it will really ease you into being a big fan of racing.
And Memorial Day can be a lousy weather day, but it looks like you're going to have a nice hot track. Is that a good thing or bad thing for sport?
Well, it depends. So they've got the new aero package now. This is the first year that they've done it, and the cars, they, you know, they're beautiful. That was one of the things they wanted to do, was make them safer. I can't imagine, right, when you're going 200 and getting up to 230 miles an hour, that beauty is really an essential thing. But they want them to look good, and the aero package, so there's less downforce, there's less drag. Typically, when it's hot like this, and it's going to be, you know, over 90 degrees, back in 2012, it was 92 degrees, there was 35 lead changes, and Dario Franchitti won it. So for the fans, it should be exciting racing. For the drivers, it's going to be a little slick out there.
Yeah. You're on at 2 o'clock this afternoon, huh, Dane?
I am, and we're going to be giving away a four-pack to the Roots. The racing never stops, John. The Route 66 Raceway, the drag racing that's going to come up to Nationals at Route 66 next weekend. We'll give away four tickets today for that as well, and hopefully everyone will tune into the 500 tomorrow.
Yeah, well, let's start with 2 o'clock this afternoon. Dane Neal. Nice to talk to you again, Dane. Keep up the good work. We'll be in touch.
Thanks, John. Talk to you soon.
On the road with Dane Neal. It's 10:47. One other thing that sort of marks summer, the beaches are open. The water will be cold. There was a great page one story in the Chicago Tribune yesterday about what's happened to the beaches of Chicago. I just want to touch on that in a minute here on WGN. In the Tribune yesterday, they had a story titled, "What's with all that littering?" The article noted that the Chicago Park District alone spent $4.7 million picking up trash along the lakefront last year. Last year, the city issued 1,215 tickets for littering. Boy, I've never seen that happen. A ticket costs you up to $1,500. 9 out of 10 pieces of litter along the beaches in Chicago are plastic. So far this year, Green wrote, volunteers in Chicago have held 52 adoptive beach cleanup events and have picked up 1,631 pounds of litter. They described an experiment. They said a psychologist put flyers on people's windshields. Those least likely to litter, to throw the flyer on the ground, saw another person take their flyer and throw it in the trash. In the experiment, when the subject saw someone else throw the flyer into the trash, they did the same thing 100% of the time. But when people are around litter and litterers, they tend to think, what difference does it make, and they litter too. The article quoted Jennifer Caddick, who is a spokesperson for the Chicago-based nonprofit Alliance for the Great Lakes. She's on a phone line right now. She just got off of Lake Michigan. Hey, Jennifer, it's John Williams. How are you today?
Hi, John. I'm great, thanks.
You know, the more I read that article, I read it twice now, and you and I talked a little bit yesterday. When I hear about these volunteer efforts to pick up trash, I don't know if I'm glad or sad. There shouldn't be, Jennifer, any trash to pick up along the beaches, period.
That's true. You know, we would love to live in a world where our beaches were pristine all of the time. But at the same time, at the Alliance for the Great Lakes, we're absolutely thankful for the roughly 15,000 volunteers who go out every year on all five Great Lakes to participate in the Adopt a Beach program, and not only help keep our beaches beautiful, but keep all of that litter and debris out of the Great Lakes.
We use the lake walkway all the time. And at the end of this interview, just in a few minutes, we don't have a lot of time here, Jennifer, but let's tell people how they can help pick up the trash or just be good stewards of the beaches. Besides being unsightly, and I'll tell you what happens to North Street Beach this weekend will just break your heart. I really mean that. Is it unsafe? I mean, is there a sort of health concern when people are disrespectful to the public way?
Well, certainly it's not good to have litter and trash out there. And hopefully people are listening to the show and will be reminded to clean up after themselves. You know, we all think that that one little paper wrapper or food wrapper won't make a difference, right? But obviously it does. You know, when you leave North Avenue Beach at the end of the day or any beach, a lot of times you see a lot of trash left behind. So each action makes a difference. Certainly, hopefully people will keep that in mind when they hit the beaches this weekend or on the Great Lakes.
How expensive would it be, though? But literally, though, I think that those plastics eventually break down. They get in the ecosystem. Animals try and consume them. It's bad that way, isn't it?
It is. So that plastic never actually goes away. It just breaks down into smaller and smaller pieces, which end up out in the water. And certainly that's a problem for wildlife because they think they're little pieces of algae or plankton that they might eat. But that also, there recently was a study that shows that ends up back in our drinking water. Those little teeny tiny plastic pieces, whether they're fibers or other things, they've done studies of drinking water around the Great Lakes region. They've even studied beer that's bottled in the Great Lakes region, and they've found microscopic pieces of plastic. So it never goes away. It just gets smaller and smaller. And certainly that's a concern for the health of the Great Lakes and ultimately us, because we're consuming that again.
I've never seen an official give somebody a ticket for leaving their trash on the beach, but that must be an easy ticket. Or I'm getting nutty about this, but I mean, like, I don't think there's enough trash containers. I want them to get employees, if they have to just comb the beaches during the day and let people throw their garbage in there. They're lazy. They should take it with them. But I don't think we're accommodating these litterers enough. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, certainly it is absolutely frustrating. But I guarantee each of us has been in a group at some point, right? And you see somebody either accidentally or purposefully drop something and walk away, right? And so each of us can remind our family, our friends, you know, the person next to us, like, oh, hey, it looks like you dropped your water bottle. Let's pick it up and put it in the trash. And so, you know, like the researchers in that Chicago Tribune article talked about, is if you see one person take care of their trash, you're more likely and the people around you are more likely to do the same. And so, again, a lot of it starts with each of us every day.
I'm going to start walking around with a garbage bag. I swear to God, I'm going to be that nutty guy yelling at people, barking at them on the beach. Are you done with that? If I want to help out, though, in a more civilized or organized way, what's the website to go to?
Yeah, absolutely. Visit our website. It's greatlakes.org. And just click on Get Involved, and you can find out more about the Adopt a Beach programs and all of the different ways to volunteer to help the Great Lakes.
Greatlakes.org. Greatlakes.org. Yep. Jennifer Caddick is a spokesperson. And when you go up Lakeshore Drive and you see some happy people rowing along in one of those long boats, you may be looking at Jennifer Caddick.
That's true.
Nice to talk to you, Jennifer. Thanks for your time. Good luck to you all. And everybody go to that website, greatlakes.org. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks so much, John.
Okay, it's 10:57. This is WGN. We've got the news next. 11:10. Hey, it's John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Glad to be here. Remember, you can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3. And on social media, I'm WGN King John. I'm also the host, if you will, of a podcast we call The Mincing Rascals. We record it with some of our friends from the Chicago Tribune and here at WGN Radio. We post it Thursday afternoons, and we like to broadcast part of it. The podcast broadcasts Saturday mornings at about 11:10. So this week it was Kristen McQuarrie, the editorial writer for the Chicago Tribune, one of them, and a Tuesday columnist. Eric Zorn, a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Patty Vasquez, who you hear pretty late on WGN Radio weeknights, and our own newsman, Steve Bertram. We started talking about the stalled North Korea summit. We moved on to the NFL. I asked the gang if they thought the president's pulling out was a good idea of the summit, and Kristen McQuarrie said,
he is known for, in The Art of the Deal, talking about how he's never afraid, you can never be afraid to walk away from the table. It feels very risky to me. I am thinking that there is a more long-term plan to get more leverage, but to embarrass Kim Jong-un at this moment does not seem to be a really wise move. And it not only puts us at risk, but all the South Koreans and the North Koreans who are hoping for the summit to do something to boost their economic prosperity. This just feels like a kick in the pants. Well, thanks for the hostages, suckas. See ya.
Totally. I'm so not visiting Korea anytime soon.
I think the reporting is that the president canceled before he was canceled upon, pretty much. I mean, Pompeo was on Capitol Hill after where he read that letter and then later said, you know, that the North Koreans had stopped returning phone calls and were canceling meetings, not just with South Korea, but with the U.S. to set up logistics. He said that there was a great change in tone from then after he left earlier this month or last month. So I think all the signs were there that it wasn't going to happen on either side. So the president just sort of took the initiative to make it look like it was decision
more. He broke up with them before they
broke
up. Yeah,
kind of.
Well, was that a smart move then?
I would think so. Better than having Kim Jong-un cancel on you.
I don't know. How about let's not do any interviews on Fox or CBS or anywhere and go do the summit instead of characterizing that as the Libyan model?
Or using the words like decimate. If you don't cooperate or play by our rules,
right.
We'll decimate
you. We
were
so posturing ourselves before we even got there. I thought it'd be swell if they went to Singapore, closed the doors. Kim Jong-un ostensibly extended himself to the United States.
Ostensibly, yeah. I don't think he really was.
Well, we accepted the invitation, though, Eric.
The answer to Kristen's question was it smart? I think it was smart today. I think it was smart for the president to be the one who pulled the plug rather than wait to have the plug pulled on him. That's smart politics. Out of context, but yes, look at
today's.
Yeah.
So they invited us to a summit and offered to denuclearize themselves in some fashion, and we said okay, and then we changed our mind.
Oh, we changed our mind?
The president just wrote him a letter saying we're not going to go to the summit.
Well,
right?
But because the North Koreans said we're not going to denuclearize. I mean, all along this was. If we were watching Scooby Doo, we'd know it was a trap, right? I mean,
dirt kid.
They just don't. The North Koreans don't behave. It was too easy. They don't behave that way. And by the way, that doesn't mean it's over now. You know, this is what they do. They throw up a huge obstacle, and it doesn't mean that they're not going to renegotiate or come back to the table or something. But the idea that they're going to say, I'll meet you in Singapore, and by the way, we'll bring our nukes, you know, it was always too easy.
You have news crews there right now. Like CBS is reporting that they have reporters on the ground who have been witnessing the destruction of so-called nuke sites. So, I mean, I'm tempted to believe that North Korea was being sincere. I guess I can't even
finish
that sentence.
Why would they destroy a nuclear site without any without getting anything from it? You know, I mean, they are willing to do that once they get concessions from the U.S., but they're not going to unilaterally. I mean, the reporting I saw on it that this was a reversible action and that it was kind of a sketchy facility.
And it wasn't a particularly active site.
Right.
It was a gesture. I'm sorry. What do I know about negotiating nuclear deals? But it seems to me like they made two major gestures. Now let's go over there and talk about it. I don't see the harm in the United States participating in talks.
Well, to have good faith negotiations, though, you have to have someone at the table who in good faith. And I don't think you can ever trust that that is going to be North Korea.
But I thought the president had said that he was honorable. I thought that we were there.
It was a beautiful gesture.
He did, he did have conciliatory language again for him about the release of the hostages. John, I think you're going to find that this wasn't the president's decision, that this was maybe doomed on both sides, but it wasn't like the president in a snit decided not to go.
Okay. Boy, I'm getting a lot more sympathy for the administration on this than I thought I would today.
Not for me.
Well, on today, as I said, today it was the right thing to do. I think that the thing that was the wrong thing for them to have done was to raise expectations that they were going to denuclearize the entire Korean Peninsula. That was never going to happen.
Well, then the president shouldn't have said yes publicly to begin with.
Yes, that's true.
He interrupted a press conference to come in and say, hey, we got this thing brewing with North Korea. We're going to have a meeting. I mean, he blew it up. All the tweets, it's been crazy for the last month.
I'm looking for the line here. You talk about your nuclear capabilities, but ours are so massive and powerful that I pray to God they will never have to be used. What's that all about?
Don't be surprised again, John. I mean, come on. This is what he does. Just move on.
Okay. All right. Well, fine. We'll move on. Let's talk about the NFL. NFL owners voted unanimously to turn another perfectly good football season into a national harangue over the meaning of patriotism, free speech, workers' rights, and rules. This is going to be a lot of fun, and August and September. Eric, what was your reaction to that ruling?
Well, my reaction to this all along has been that the national anthem, first of all, these protests are not against the flag. They're not against the anthem.
By the way, what I'm even talking
about. Well, this is when NFL players are taking the knee. Colin Kaepernick started it. Other ones joined in. And it had to do with police brutality and racism. And that was what the protest was about. They wanted to call attention to that. And there's a lot of questions as to whether that's an appropriate venue for that. And the NFL, as an employer, has a right to set employee work rules. I think it sends a bad message. I think it sort of misunderstands what patriotism is if you compel it from people. This has a potential, I suppose, to backfire, which is that when you tell people they can't do something, when you threaten them that you can't exercise your right to freedom of expression, you have to stand up. You have not only do you have to stand there and show respect if you're going to be on the field at all.
And I wonder how many players will choose to be in the locker room, and then will that be a statement? And how many people, fans or people watching the games, are going to keep track of who wasn't and wasn't on the
field? This isn't just about kneeling. It was the wording of this deal, of this offer, this order, was that you had to show respect for the flag. So you can't like have your fist in the air. You can't turn your back. Strike a dap pose.
Okay, so we anticipated that, Eric. So we said, all right, you have to stand at attention. How can you make some sort of physical statement? The fist in the air is too obvious.
I suggested standing on one leg. Just lift one calf off.
Something that would set you apart and say, I'm not with the rest. So Steve then thinks...
The next year they would ban that and say you have to have 2 feet on the ground. So then I think we should go to tippy toes. Yes.
Right. You have your fingers crossed behind your back going, not so much.
And in two years you stand on your tippy toes and make that illegal.
I think that's why the wording was so vague about respectful. So they can say, well, no, standing on one leg is disrespectful. They're giving them
the option. If you want to take the stand and you want to be courageous or whatnot, then stay in the locker room. I don't think it is, but I'm just saying they're giving them an option. If you don't want to be,
you are with the NFL on this.
Yeah, I am. It's a private company.
The organization they can do whatever they want.
I am not allowed as a Tribune employee to sign petitions to put campaign signs in my
yard. How tone deaf are they?
I would have loved to have signed a petition as I was walking in today for Doctors Without Borders. I'm not allowed to do it. It's a rule of my company.
A lot of black men work in the NFL. They are sympathetic with the plight of black men in this country, and all they're doing is asking, can I take the same sort of knee a Martin Luther King would have taken? And the NFL, as that topic faded last year, has revisited it, and now they're going to impose patriotism on these athletes.
No, they're just imposing, just like they do with what they can wear or their behavior or their conduct. They can go march in the streets. They can express their First Amendment rights in every other way. This is your boss telling you our business is losing money and revenue over your behavior.
Oh, I think that's a mistake.
And that's why they're pressured to change the rules. I'm under rules with the Tribune. I would love to be able to be more.
I hope the NFL loses money this year. Well, I hope they all stand at attention, salute, and they lose a fortune.
I agree with Kristen, though. I think you probably do, too. It is within the rights or the power of the NFL to do this. You are working for that entity, and they have the ability to do this. I don't know if it's going to help them in the long run. And this whole militarization and enforced patriotism before sporting events it's just going to implode one day because I just don't like it.
I think those are all excellent points. What I think is that the movement needed to move beyond the kneeling anyway. I think that there needs to be more of a commitment to do better. And I think some of the teams have committed to finding out more. I think that the Bears organization has said, look, we want to know what's going on. What can we do to make this better?
Right. Well, the NFL has committed millions of dollars to kind of a civil rights measure by the Players Association. So they're going to sort of put their money where the players' mouth is. But I just think this is a fight they don't even need to win.
And it was ironic that it comes out on the same day that the police cam, the body cam video from Milwaukee showing how the police up there tased Milwaukee Bucks player Sterling Brown. For parking in a handicapped spot. And this is exactly the kind of thing that they were taking a knee about.
So I would be really tempted to tase him too, but that's just a personal thing.
He's not your favorite player?
No, I'm saying in a handicapped spot.
That's a crime.
I have a son with special needs and I see those cars
beaten
all
with sticks, perhaps, but not by police. It does seem to be, yes, Kristen's right that, if our employers wanted to tell us that we have to stand at attention and sing the national anthem when we come to work every morning, that's their right. And we as outside critics can say that we think that's a bad idea. I think the whole idea of doing this performative patriotism before a game is a bad idea.
What do you think of this, Eric? All the players, first game, take a knee.
They're not going to do it. I would think that would be great if they did. If you were standing up for their right to do it.
Oh, sure. I think that's the new issue for me.
But they don't have the right to do it.
Absolutely do.
But there's risk with that. They can do it, but then your employer can.
Okay, actions have consequences. Sure. But I mean, you can take.
You can't say whatever you want in this room and do whatever you want. If you are here. In the employ of WGN Radio.
Your First Amendment right, the First Amendment is a compact between you and your government, not between you and your employer.
And that's an important point, too. This is not government telling players they cannot take a knee. It's their employer.
Well, there was a lot of pressure from the president and a lot of attention paid to it. And this looks like a big win for the president. I told you so.
Do you see that this way, Patty? Is this Trump part two on this issue?
I think so.
You guys agree with Patty on that?
Did you hear what the president said? He said those people should leave the country if they don't want to do that.
Sons of bitches, right?
He started it. He did it, especially at that rally. But people, this is a really hot button issue with rank and file voters.
I think you're right. Rank and file voters, not players, and rank and file players now too. But this time, Patty, I don't see this as sort of a referendum on Donald Trump. I don't see him as part of this conversation today.
Oh, I do.
I do.
You do. He's still the motivating or driving force on this.
Well, in his base, I think that they see how ardent they are, how so much they support him, and they want them to be as devoted to football as they are to the president.
Scooby-Doo, where are you?
Had to end with a Scooby-Doo tag there. I couldn't find Zoinks. But thank you, Steve Bertrand, for that reference to Scooby-Doo. And Patty Vasquez, the last voice you heard here from WGN Radio. And, of course, Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. Kristen McQuarrie, I'm John Williams. That's the Mincing Rascals podcast. You should listen to it. The gang's pretty good. And they always end with their recommendations for the week, including this week, Kristen's, I won't say locale, but I guess I could, her new recipe for margaritas using Fresca. Let's just leave it at that. 11:23 on WGN. 11:25, almost 26 now. Still to come, our Vibe Score segment. Few things in the news we haven't touched on yet. We scored them on a scale of 1 to 100. We're doing it differently this week. Griffin, Domati, Joe, and I will each come up with a topic for the gang to consider. We'll ask the appropriate question and then score. I think you guys already know what I'm going to ask you to score. 1 to 100, the royal wedding. 4 weeks in a row, the royal wedding. Griffin, 1 to 100, where are you on the royal wedding now? Exactly.
Did you hear I turned my microphone on just to say nothing? I hope that came through.
Well, that's kind of an editorial comment. We could hear you say nothing. They are Chicago, and they're real. Watch Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggets, Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten. Get real in the morning with the WGN-TV Morning News Team, weekdays from 4 to 10. You guys think this is a little too obtuse for the Vibe Score segment? Living on the Big Island of Hawaii. If I said, hey, let's go move to the Big Island of Hawaii, who's coming with me? 1 to 100, I'm so there. 0. No way. What are you, crazy? I'm not moving to Hawaii. Joe Brand, where are you? Moving to Hawaii, Big Island, go.
Probably 20.
Yeah.
There's a lot of selling points. I mean, isn't there some bad volcanic explosions going on right
Those
there
are fascinating. Right, you know, I think if, this sounds terrible to say, but if I knew my house and I would survive, wow. It's just amazing what's happening over there right now. And my favorite part now is it's going to the sea. Here comes hot lava just running into the ocean.
That's your favorite part? You are pretty cynical right now then, right?
Well, no, it's making more island. It's like, well, how are islands and continents created? Watch this. Here's some happening right now. It's changing the face of the Big Island. It's so cool.
Isn't that how Navy Pier started off? Wasn't it a lot of the debris and ash from the Chicago fire pushed off?
No kidding, really? Navy Pier? Or
I thought you were going to say it was a volcano nearby that exploded. And then...
Oh, you never heard about the Great Chicago Volcano?
Are you thinking about Lakeshore Drive and the extension of the lake that way? Or you think they pushed it out and that's where the pier began to be formed? I'm just questioning you.
Yeah, I'm questioning myself now, too. Wondering if...
Griffin, go to the Google. Navy Pier, how did it create volcano? See what you come up with. 1139, 1140 now. Thank you, Domitee. This is John Williams. You're listening to WGN Radio. Saturdays at this time, we do a segment we call The Vibe Score, where we, on a scale of 1 to 100, score some things. We're doing it a little differently this week. Each of us will offer something to the group. Griffin always takes the lead, and he usually starts with a song. What were we listening to there, Griff?
That was a song called Oblivion by Grimes, a singer, songwriter, producer from Canada. That song came out in 2012, but Grimes is in the news these past couple weeks. Do you know why?
No.
She's dating Elon Musk.
Oh, right.
You may have seen something about this.
I heard about that, but I didn't know her music at all.
If you did know her music, this was like a real shock and just a very strange pairing. They met on Twitter. They made the same joke or something like that, and he looked her up. And, you know, reaching out to people randomly on Twitter works differently when you're a billionaire. And so then they met
you
up.
Think?
It's a little, the success rate, I imagine, is a little higher.
I reached out to Katy Perry. Nothing. Nothing.
So now they're dating, and they appeared together at the Met Gala, which was a while ago. But her music's just been on my mind. And this came out. I love this song. This is off Visions from 2012.
I kind of like that. I wonder if Mar downloads of her. I wonder if she's been getting a lot more downloads and purchases.
Probably, yeah. I mean, it's been a long time since she put out new music. Her last album was in 2015, but everyone's just talking about her. A lot of her fans are upset because they see Elon Musk as a evil capitalist billionaire, union buster, yeah, and things like this. And that all seems pretty true to me, but I'm not going to. But I also don't love getting mad at her for that.
Right. I think it's hard to turn down a kind of handsome billionaire, right? Who,
and he's, are we going with kind of handsome? Let's rate that instead.
Okay, how handsome
good, how
is,
good looking is Elon Musk? I would not go. I don't know.
Okay, 1 to 100. Griffin, go.
I don't.
Come on.
It depends on the picture you get, but I'd say 40.
Wait, how much is Elon Musk worth? 100.
I'm telling you, I'd switch teams. 95. Elon, you are so handsome.
It's like every billionaire is kind of handsome.
His mom,
no matter what they look like,
his mom is gorgeous. His mom is a 75-year-old model still. She's amazing.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with this, though, does it?
Did you like the song, though? We'll go back to the.
Yeah. Play a little more of that song.
There
for
was
us,
a
Griffin.
Song.
There was a song, and so independent of the celebrity fame and Domitee's new love for billionaire girlfriends, one to 100, I give Elon Musk 75. I've seen better looking guys. Okay, you wanted me to rate the music. The song, I like that, Griffin. I'm going to give it an 86. 86.
Domitee?
Oh, the song is terrible. But the relationship, Twitter love matches get 100 for me.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I do kind of like people meeting on Twitter. Joe Brand, rate the song, please.
I'll give it around a 60. It kind of has a mix of like something 80s dance into like futuristic. I can't tell if it's the song's 30 years old or 30 years young.
Yeah,
you know,
no
into
kidding.
The future.
Interesting. Yeah, right. And 1 to 100, Joe, how attracted are you to Elon Musk?
Elon Musk could be 46 or he could be 25. I'm going to go with a dead 50.
But it's not above 51. So Elon, if you're listening, womp womp. All right, now we said we'd all take turns. Joe, since you got the mic, what do you want us to consider?
I came across this article on radiotoday.com for the most likely jobs to be psychopaths. I for some reason thought maybe you would get to this. Apparently it's 4 days old. Number one is a CEO of a company.
Yeah.
Number two, journalists.
Really?
Number three, media presenters.
That's interesting.
And it's a heavy focus on radio type. So yeah. I don't know. Where do you guys feel you are in a psychopathic scale, 1 to 100?
Okay. Rate ourselves. I would say psychopath, me, that's too much work. I'm a 12. I'm the last thing you'll ever find in a psychopath.
Isn't that what a psychopath would say? I'm not an expert. But.
Griffin, 1 to 100. What are you?
50. I don't know.
Domiti, 1 to 100. How much of a psychopath are you?
Define psychopath.
Yeah.
I'm a Gemini, so I think most people would agree that I'm a psychopath. So maybe
Geminis
100.
Are getting a rough go of it these days. People really hate on Geminis.
They really do.
I'm a Gemini also.
Key character traits to look out for are the ability to control others and to be manipulative.
All right, wrap it up. So what's your rating?
What's mine?
Yes.
Oh, I'm 90% psychopath.
All right, I got two for you guys. Ready? Monday is National Hamburger Day. I want you to give me your score, 1 to 100, of the quintessential American hamburger, the McDonald's single. A McDonald's single, 1 to 100. I'm not asking you about the nutritional value or anything else. Just tell me how flavorful, how much do you like?
With cheese or no?
I'm going to go... Your call. I'll let you put cheese on it if you want. But it's not a Big Mac. It's not a Whopper. McDonald's single with or without cheese.
With or without, I'd say either way, I'd go like 89. Good.
Yeah, no kidding.
Love it.
I think they do a good job consistently. It's a terrible thing to eat, but it tastes yummy, and they're good at it every time. I give it a 90. I salute you, McDonald's. Joe Brand, go.
I agree with you with the 90. Only reason not 100, because everything in America is bigger. It should be a double, then it'd be 100.
Domiti Pongo, the McDonald's single.
A 40.
Oh.
I'm usually running late and starving when I got to get a McDonald's single. I never get it by choice.
So do you eat that very often then?
Yes.
See, that's it. I don't. I had a McDonald's single for the first time in maybe a year recently. It was just delicious. But I think if I ate a lot of those, the returns would diminish very, very quickly.
It happens rapidly.
There's a whole movie about that that you can watch. About eating too much McDonald's. What else do you have?
Size me, you mean?
Yeah.
Domiti, what have you got for us, my friend?
Okay, J. Cole is a socially conscious rapper in the vein of Donald Glover and Kendrick Lamar. He's been beefing with these young hip-hop artists who have terrible lyrics that are not positive at all for anyone. Well, these two guys sat for a one-hour conversation on Facebook to hash out their differences. So my question to you guys is, when people beef publicly, is it a publicity stunt or a sincere moment? Now, before you answer, got a quick clip from this two-hour Facebook Live conversation where they found they had more in common than not. Now, both of their parents have been divorced. Cole learned about the importance of stepdads, he says.
Not even just healthy stepfathers, because I can't just put on my stepfather. Like, I understand that my mother, because of what she went through in her life, like, I understand that she was, like, in an unhealthy space herself.
So he found out that they had this thing in common and they bonded and it was kumbaya, blah, 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 blah. So on a scale of 0 to 100, when people disagree publicly and have these spats, publicity stunt is 0 and 100 sincere moment when they make amends. What do you think?
Well, what you played for us, I thought was really cool. To be honest with you, sort of social media, Twitter, that's how America talks these days. I'm not against those things, even if they're embarrassing or they seem a little silly. 78, Griffin, go.
Well, it's case by case, right? This one seemed fairly genuine. And I didn't watch the conversation. But yeah, no, I'd go 85 usually.
Okay, what you thinking, Joe?
What do you think?
I'll go 70%. I agree that everything is just so publicized these days. You get to see two people who you never thought would interact on a daily basis, and sometimes more than that.
Yeah,
so
it's
that
cool.
Kind of day and age we live in. Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, I give it a 90. I think for a second it felt like a publicity stunt. Lil Pump has tattoos on his face, so to see him having a heartfelt conversation was refreshing, I must admit.
How about that?
There's another very public rap beef that just blew up last night. Drake versus Pusha T. Pusha T has new music coming out with Kanye West, produced an album called Daytona on the way. And I guess what some of the lyrics leaked, that he was dissing Drake for using a ghostwriter on one of his albums, things like this. So Drake just released the response track last night.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
A response track? Like he has a song responding
yes.
to that?
Yes.
Holy cow.
I can't play it. And it's not like a clean version that I could find. But
fair enough.
He
but
went
just
in on
know
it.
It's worth 100. Just know.
So I don't know if you guys have dogs in this fight, but Domiti, if you're picking sides, Pusha T or Drake, this one tore me apart. Like, with Lil Pump and J. Cole, I don't really care about either of them, to be honest. So it's like, I can leave that one. But I love Push, and I love Drake. It's very hard for me to see them squabbling like this. So where would you fall?
Oh, man, I can't pick. I think it's just good for hip-hop. I think they're both pushing each other to be better writers. The Drake track was amazing. I give that 100.
We could be speaking Chinese right now for 90% of the listeners. I'm just happy that we're having this conversation and exposing our listeners to it.
All right, tomorrow night, Cavs-Celtics, Game 7. Who do you think's going to win?
Cavs-Celtics. I don't know. Joe, do you go? Let's start with Joe, and then we'll all just agree with him.
That works.
I think the Kings' reign comes to an end.
Yeah. I don't know. God, that's so hard. How do you root against LeBron? The Celtics are the 2 seed, and they just seem to be so clever. I'm going with my boy Brad Stevens. Celtics, Griffin, go.
I'll go Celtics, too. I was interested in... I usually think home court is overstated, the importance of it, but it is interesting that it's always...
mattering in this series.
Yeah. So we'll go with that.
I got to go with LeBron. He's the Thanos of basketball. He's going for the rings, man.
Hey, let me ask you guys this. 1 to 100, 94 on Memorial Day weekend. How much do you love that? I'm a 90 for 94. Griffin, go.
0, 1. I hate it. Give me 55.
Domati, what do you want?
Give me the temp, 94.
94, he's way up there. Joe Brand, you like this weather?
56. I got to work either way, but I like to see other people happy.
Thank you, boys. We'll do it again next week. That's our little Vibe Score segment. It's some stories in the news we didn't otherwise get to hear, including the words Pusha and what were some of those things that coming out of your mouth?
I didn't know. Lil Pump, J. Cole, Pusha T.
Those kind of things, you know.
Yeah, important stuff.
It's 11:51. Amy Guth just strolled in. Let's see what's coming up after the news on WGN on the business, the Saturday business lunch. By the way, as we wrap up the Vibe Score segment, this is one thing we didn't get into, and because once we get, everybody's had this conversation this week, and there's no figuring it out. But 1 to 100, Joe... rate the NFL decision to mandate that the players stand before the game. 1 to 100.
Give it a 30.
100, it's a great decision. Yeah. 0, it's a really bad decision. A 30.
I don't know. I give it a 10. I mean, as we were...
they just lost 20 points.
As we were talking between break, I don't see how it solves anything. Either way, either argument, I don't see how it solves anything.
Where are you on this one, Ms. Guth?
I might have to go lower than Joe on that decision. Yeah. I don't even know why. You know, why do we need the anthem in any sporting event in the first place?
That's
honestly
what Steve Bertrand keeps saying. We need to take the whole political, patriotic, God bless America out of sports. Let's just play the games and not do that, which is kind of a shame because we were getting along before, but now we can't seem to. And so maybe we ought to just stop it. I'm single digits on this thing, too. I think Joe put it well. What does this solve? It's 11:56. What are you going to solve? What are you doing on the radio?
I don't know if I'm going to solve anything, but I'm sure going to try. I'm going to talk a little bit about the marijuana business in Illinois and why it might be a little more limited here than in other states. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk to two different ProPublica reporters about two totally different things. One about the accusations of age discrimination happening at IBM, and then another one about the role of insurance companies, what the role that they're playing perhaps in the rising cost of healthcare. So a lot of
insurance companies?
Yeah.
I think a lot.
Yeah. I think a lot too. Yeah. So ProPublica does so much great work and just such deep digging around data. So it's always great to talk with.
ProPublica is, I think that's a relatively new concept for people. Every now and then they hear about it. They're not exactly sure what it is. Some of the best journalists that you know and don't know are there. I mean, yeah, the Tribune, sometimes they got a lot of them too. WGN Radio does as well. But ProPublica is a force anymore, and I'm so happy for the work they do.
Yeah, and their open source format is so interesting. It's like, need this story? Go for it.
It's 11:57.